I'd like to call to order the October 6th, 2022 meeting of the Tacoma Civil Service Board. May we have the roll call, please?
Yes, Chair Hansen?
Here.
Board Member Sexton? Board Member Sexton? You're on mute. Can you unmute, please?
He's frantically waving. I'm going to say that.
Okay, there he goes. Is that it?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Wick?
Here.
Board Member Klein?
Here.
Board Member Heller? Chair Hansen,
I received an email from Board Member Heller that she had an emergency at work and she would not be able to attend the meeting tonight. Okay, so has
Chair
everyone
Hansen,
had a chance? What's that?
Chair Hansen, I just need to confirm that Deputy City Attorney Martha Lance is here.
Oh, okay, all right.
Present.
Roll call.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, yes, Board Member Sexton.
Why we're at it, now would be a good time to excuse Board Member Heller so we don't forget.
Oh, okay, thank you. This board member has excused from her attendance tonight because she has an emergency at work and was unable to attend. Okay. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes and the transcript of the minutes or the meeting, I mean? Do we have any comments regarding the transcript of the meeting? I noticed that the person that transcribed the meeting referred to Board Member Sexton as the court, and that was the only mistake that I saw, but I don't think we need to change that. They've elevated you to a Superior Court judge, which is fine. Okay. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I move adoption of the minutes.
Pardon me?
I move adoption of the minutes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor of approving the minutes as transcribed, please say aye.
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 All those opposed to the minutes as transcribed, please say nay. Okay. So moving right along to the agenda. The first issue is the COVID proclamation of emergency has been terminated by Mayor Woodward, and that was effective October 10th of 2022. So our next meeting is going to be in person, and we'll be talking about later on about where we're going to be holding that meeting. And Ms. Lance would like to brief us on the new requirements for in-person meetings. And we're in, Ms. Lance, are you ready to do that?
I certainly am. So at our last meeting, we went through the Open Public Meeting Act slides. And since we're going to go back to in-person, some of the changes that the legislature made most recently to those requirements in the Open Meeting Act will now become applicable to this board, because once the city lifted its emergency, it's now no longer legal to not have an in-person meeting. So that's a lot of negatives, but basically you're required to meet in person again. the differences and the updates that the legislature made was to formally recognize that that in-person meeting requirement can be satisfied with a room or a physical location made available to members of the public by, in our case, the city, by the jurisdiction, but that board members, commissioners, members of the relevant governing body, all of them may, if they wish, appear virtually or by telephone. So the in-person meeting effort or requirement is satisfied by putting on the meeting notice that there's a meeting room in City Hall or whatever room it is, that members of the public can come there at the appointed time, and that satisfies the requirements. Now, I know everybody here is anxious to get back meeting in person, so I expect most of you will yourselves also be present, but I wanted to just be clear that so long as that physical space is available, that every single member of the board, body, or commission can appear other than in person. And there's no requirement that we hold an electronic or a hybrid option for meetings, but the city council and the mayor and the city executives have urged that commissions, boards, and committees make a hybrid option available so that members of the public are more able to attend and participate should they wish, if they're still uncomfortable about attending in person, or simply because of some of the lessons we've learned during this time, is that it really is a lot more convenient for many folks, and it's increased participation in many of our public meetings by allowing people the ability to appear in a more informal fashion. Working parents, for example, people who work, you know, different shifts, all of the types of accommodations that are just made available to our citizens and our residents by these technological abilities are things that the city would like to see continue. So as Chair Hansen mentioned, we're going to be talking about sort of the operational planning for returning to in-person meetings starting in November. But the encouragement is to make a hybrid option for members of the public, as well as the always available opportunity for board members to call in or otherwise, you know, appear virtually. So those are the updates, and I'm looking forward to reconstituting. Might be a little bit rocky. We're sort of forgotten how to behave in public, it seems like.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Lance.
Sure.
So I'm assuming that we're going to go ahead, and then I'm not sure if we should vote on this or not, but I'm assuming that we're going to go ahead and offer a hybrid option for our meetings, or do we have the option not to do that? Ms. Lance?
Well, you have the legal option not to, but like I said, the city is really encouraging it. So we actually have that as the I think we can talk about that under the board discussion of sort of the operational impacts or operational choices format and that under the next it's not the next agenda item, but it's the one after that. So
okay, yeah. So the next agenda item is the study session being held in conjunction with the upcoming board meeting. So what we're going to be doing is having the study session in the same room as the board meetings. And I think that's what we discussed at an earlier meeting. And in conjunction with that, we need to talk about where we would like to hold the board meetings now that they're in person. And we do have the option of remaining in the council chambers and then having a study session in the council chambers. Ms. Lance has talked about an option of using a conference room instead of the actual council chambers, where we would have both a meeting, the formal meeting, and then a study session after that. which might be conducive more to a study session, because I think it might be a little hard to have a study session in the council chambers. But that's something that I wanted to discuss tonight. And I wanted to get input from all the board members to see what they would like to do, whether or not they would like to continue to hold meetings in the council chambers and then have a study session in the council chambers, or go to a conference room and have a study session in the conference room. And Ms. Lance, yes, you raised your hand.
Oh, yeah. Just I found out a little bit more information than when we talked earlier in about this topic. We had a meeting with Chair Hansen and with Ms. Hobson and Ms. Fritz to sort of talk about various options that the chair wanted to bring to the board for further discussion. And I did find out that the meeting room that is adjacent to the the city council chambers, where I think in the distant past at this point, the board has retreated for study sessions, that is not set up for technology that would really allow this hybrid option. It's not one of the rooms that the city IT staff has given the full technological array to. And also, just to remind you that, you know, your study sessions, as the chair was saying, are absolutely part of your regular open meeting. So any members of the public who are interested are free to attend those sessions as well. And the technology issue aside, that room is small, so it doesn't really lend itself to social distancing, both for board member and staff comfort, as well as for members of the public. So to the chair's point, that the council chambers remains available, but there's not the immediately adjacent conference room is not really a suitable location for the in-person component of the study session. And to what the chair was mentioning, the city has a number of other quite large conference rooms that can be configured to both allow the technological array to be exercised for this hybrid option that easily allows both board members and members of the public to appear remotely, but is also big enough and formal enough that it can be arranged for the more formal portion of your meeting as well as the study session. So I just wanted to give you an update, Chair, as I found out a little bit more information around just the physical locations available.
Great, thank you, Ms. Lance. So, from the main, and Ms. Lance, if you want to add something to this, let me know. But so, the way I see it is, we have two options. We can continue to hold the meetings in the council chambers, but if we want the hybrid option, which I think is a good idea, we would have to have the study sessions in the council chambers as well. And the other option is to go to one of these larger conference rooms that are equipped for the audio and visual, so that we could offer the hybrid option for the public and then hold both the formal meeting and the study session in the conference room. So so if board members, if you'd like to provide input and I'd like to discuss, you know, what the board members would like to do. and board member Sexton.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't remember the name or the number of the room, but you know where we've met a few times before, and where the city charter met, that room in the building next doors to the council chambers. You know, that's a pretty good size room. It's, you know, it has the tables around in a square, you know, so public would come up to the table to meet with us. And, you know, that might be an option if, you know, if we, you know, had to, you know, go somewhere else.
Ms. Lance?
Yeah. Yes, I just wanted to add that one of the things that I also found out is that particular part of the building is not going to be open to the public for those types of meetings. So that room, I know the one that board member Sexton is talking about, that's not available. But actually, you know, in the time that we've been away, they've redone a very nice brand new conference room that is right inside the front door off of the Market Street side. And then the other one that's to the other side of the front door of the Market Street side of the entrance to the municipal building is also quite a large room. And that that's used for the council for their committee meetings. And that both of those rooms are available. So sorry to immediately take one off the table.
Board member Sexton, do you have another comment?
Okay, Ms. Chairman, I appreciate that information very much. I think any of those rooms, you know, would sounds great. You know, I don't see any problem. If it meets our needs, it would be fine, I'm sure.
Okay. Board Member Klein.
Yeah, I guess my idea on this would be to go with what is the most conducive and welcoming for the public. It has the technology necessary to do what we need to do. And then finally, that it's secure, that if something did happen, we weren't so far away that if we needed somebody to come and save us or help us or deal with, you know, some kind of a circumstance, that the security would be. So if all of these meet that, I'm fine with it. On the other hand, if there's an area that's more secure than the other, I would go for the more secure.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Lance, did you have some information in regard to Board Member Klein's concerns?
Not specifically. Maybe Director Fritz could has some more knowledge on that. But you know, anytime the building is open for evening meetings of public boards, committees, and commissions, building security is there, and you know, TPD can be summoned right away as well. And if there's anything controversial on anybody's agenda, extra security being requested is always an option.
And I don't have anything to add to that, other than, you know, if there, as Deputy City Attorney Lance says, if there's something that we feel is going to be an issue or problematic, we can totally get additional security or the police. In the 5 years that I've been here, there has not that things aren't different now, but there hasn't been an issue or any kind of security threat. But if, you know, if that is a concern of the board, we can certainly look into that.
Okay. So I think, assuming that we can provide the security for a conference room, would someone like to make a motion as to whether or not to remain in the council chambers and have the study sessions in the council chambers, or move to the conference room that Ms. Lance has described?
So moved.
To hold both the study session and the meeting? You would, okay,
so moved.
So what's your motion, Board Member Sexton?
Exactly what you just said. Let's stay in the chambers, and when we need to move, let's move.
What? Sorry.
Well, I don't think we're going to be required to move out of there. I mean, we can go into either facility, right, Ms. Lance? We have the nice of
I wanted to make sure I understood the motion. The motion was to have the formal meeting in the chambers and then move to a conference room for the study session, or was the motion to conduct the entire meeting, the formal portion and the study session, in a conference room in the same room?
Well, I guess I'm the maker of the motion. I was trying to reflect what the chair said. You know, I'll withdraw my motion.
Okay.
I'll withdraw my motion. I think we would probably be, you know, it sounds like we need to go to one of those conference rooms.
Okay. So Board Member Sexton, would you like to make a motion to move to the one of those big conference rooms that Ms. Lance was describing?
I don't really know if that's necessary. I think, you know, we could just let, you know, staff handle it and check it out. And if, you know, that seems to, you know, work best, let's do that.
So you want Board Member Sexton, so you don't want us to make that decision. You want the staff to make that decision.
I don't know that we're ready to make that decision. We're making a decision with little to no information. You know, we know that, you know, what do we know? We know that, the council chamber may not be able to meet all of our needs, and you know, maybe there's some other rooms that would, you know, so I'm fine with, you know, leaving this up to staff. You know, I don't see how it's you know, it's a real big important decision. You know, we've been moved around plenty of times before, and we were never consulted on, you know, where we were going to meet. You know, mm-hmm. I think, you know, if staff comes back and says, you know, this place will work, we can make a decision then if you want. But, you know, I don't think that, you know, we're making a decision with, you know, very little or no information. And I don't think we need to do that.
Chair Hansen?
Yes.
I believe you were asking if anyone wanted to make a motion, and you've got two hands up.
I was looking at Dan's Board Member Sexton's frame, and then I noticed that Board Member Wick and Board Member Klein have, and they certainly need to provide their input. I'm not sure which one was first, so hopefully I'll pick the right one. And Board Member Wick, would you like to provide some input?
I would, but Board Member Klein was first, so I would defer to him if he would like to go.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Board Member Klein, I'm sorry. Excuse me.
The disadvantage that some of us have is that, you know, we haven't been to an in-person meeting, so we're trying to go on the basis of input from everybody. And I can respect and appreciate what Board Member Sexton's recommendation is with just having the staff set it up for us. But the other thing I was thinking as a compromise so we can get moving is we could start in the council chambers, and nothing stops us, I assume, from at some point finding out what, if there is any problem associated with that for study sessions, but that we could then make it a change at that time rather than trying to guess what problems we think we're going to experience and try to guess what room we think's going to solve it.
Thank you. Board Member Wick.
I think it's important that we set a space so that our public knows on a regular and reoccurring basis where we're going to be meeting. I do think we've been provided information. I think council chambers is too large. I think we're going to be a small number of bodies in a very large space where I think if we are in one of these rooms off that Martha was speaking about, I think they're sufficient. They sound large. They're set up for the technology. Council meets in them for committee meetings, so they're clearly set up for our needs. And I just think council chambers is overkill size wise. And I think one of those rooms would be sufficient. So I would actually make a motion that we choose one of those rooms, set it as our primary space, if we move forward and we find out it doesn't work, then we can change it. But I think we need to be published where we're at and the folks know where we're going to be every month and not searching for us in the building.
Okay. So Board Member Wick, your motion would be to go to a conference room. And then if for some reason we all don't like it, we can always go back to the council chambers. Is that?
Yes. So for the meeting and for study sessions to be in a conference room, unless moving forward, it just isn't working.
Okay. And is there a second to that motion?
Yeah, I'll second it.
Okay. And we're going to have, let's have some, some further discussion of the motion. And I think Ms. Lutz was next.
I was just going to add, I think Board Member Wick covered it, but just remember that the council chambers, your meeting spot there is up on the dais, and to then regroup for the study session, you'd have to leave that room, physically move yourselves somewhere else. The closest room to that is not available really for public meetings, that small conference room. So just wanted to just make sure that was clear. And I think that Board Member Wick's motion reflected that. So
Board Member Sexton.
Well, I agree with most of what I've heard, which I think, is similar to the original motion I made, but I just, want to point out, my disagreement to a couple of things that Board Member Wick said. You know, the council chambers is a wonderful room, and it's a great room for the public. It's a perfect room for when we have a hearing. There really isn't anything else that matches that. It's really, a friendly, accessible room to the public. And, all the other rooms are less so. I just want everyone to keep that in mind, that it's not too big. That it's a nice room. And when we have public in there, it's really good to have those seats. So that's all I had. Thank you.
Remember what?
There's nothing to say that on instances where we do have hearings that we couldn't formalize that when we have hearings, they're held in council chambers versus the breakout room that we would be in, or meeting room.
All right. Thank you. Board Member Sexton, your hand's up again. Board Member Sexton.
It just stays up there. I don't know how you're supposed to hit it each time, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. So let's vote on Board Member Wick's motion. Do we need to read that again, Wendy? The motion or before we vote?
Oh. Yes.
Oh. Okay. So Board Member Sexton would like us the motion read back before we vote on it. Did you happen to take notes of that, or
I just have the first and second. I do
Okay, so
Board Member Wick. Recording. So if a board member or Vice Chair Wick would like to just.
Yeah.
Okay. I noted it down. If you want, I can read my notes. Or Board Member Wick can restate
it. It's just my motion is that we meet in one of those meeting rooms, the larger meeting rooms that Martha relayed. Because again, it doesn't preclude us from moving if need be in the future. So, but I think we do need to have that set space. So my motion was that we meet regularly in one of those rooms.
Okay. All in favor of Board Member Wick's motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, say nay. Okay. We have that taken care of. So the next issue that we have is the consideration of residency waivers. And I would just like to fill in Board Member Wick and Board Member Klein about our past history on this issue before we get into this in detail with Ms. Fritz. And as you know, the city charter provides that with certain statutory exceptions, all applicants for employment be residents of the city of Tacoma. And what happened in the past is that there was a blanket waiver of that residency requirement. And I was not on the board at the time when that waiver was enacted, but I believe Board Member Sexton was on the board. And then several months ago, we decided to lift that blanket waiver and reinstate the residency requirements for applicants. And so now we do have a residency requirement. Just to back up, that residency requirement was lifted by Mayor Woodward's in conjunction with her emergency COVID orders. And now since that order has been terminated, the residency requirement for applicants will be reinstated as of October 10th of 2022. So now we have the issue, we have a couple of issues in connection with this. First of all, Ms. Fritz would like to have us decide what we're going to do in the interim, and she's going to be talking about that issue, whether or not, you know, we're going to continue that, and if we do, how we're going to proceed. And then we are going to have a study session as to what we're going to do on a permanent basis with residency. And we will be revisiting that at the next study session, I believe in November, to decide whether or not we want to continue with the residency requirement, whether or not we want to live, you know, have a blanket waiver again. Do we want to have some kind of a preference for residency? There's a number of different things that we can consider. So that's going to be under discussion in our November meeting. So at this point, Ms. Fred, would you like to talk about your position on residency and the problems that you would experience effective October 10th when that emergency order will be lifted and the residency will be reinstated?
Sure. Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. First, let me mention that our city council has granted a blanket residency waiver for our non-classified staff. So that is sort of a in-place permanent thing now that occurs. What happens in our hiring process that's already pretty lengthy, that is that we go through the process, we identify the best candidate. If that candidate doesn't reside within the city of Tacoma limits, then we, and we want to hire them, we have to either ask them to move to the city of Tacoma or bring forward to the Civil Service Board a case for a waiver of residency requirement. As you can imagine, in this current environment, it's a little bit challenging because the board currently meets, you know, once a month, but the market for people right now is super hyper competitive, and we're trying to move as quickly as we can to fill vacancies and bring in the best people to the city of Tacoma. So my ask of you this afternoon is to allow us or grant us the temporary blanket residency waiver for all of our classified positions until we as a group can sort out what we want to do next in terms of looking at a residency preference program or whatever it might look like in the future. So that is what I'm asking you to consider at this moment. And I'm happy to answer any questions about how all of that works if you have any questions.
Ms. Fritz, what another alternative, I think there we discussed briefly, another alternative would be to hold more board meetings, and I'm not sure everybody would be really excited about that. And also, I'm not sure, and Ms. Lance may be able to provide some her legal input into whether or not we could, if we had this come before us, if you were trying to hire somebody, you emailed us the information about the job, could we vote by email? And would that be a way that we could expedite whether or not to grant the waiver instead of having a blanket waiver? Or some other kind of arrangement. Go ahead, Ms. Lance.
Sure, Hanson, you could do it by phone. You could do it by an in-person meeting. You could do it by a phone meeting. But remember that if you meet as a group, we still have to set up a room, even if none of you are in it. But you can't do it by email. Email is not... doesn't have the ability to let the public into that decision-making process. So that can't be.
Oh, okay. So how would we do it by phone?
Well, we'd have to call a special meeting, open up some kind of room in a public building, and then speakerphone or video link or whatever, you all could call in from elsewhere, but staff would have to be there to let any members of the public in who might wish to attend.
Would likely need those on a weekly basis, just so you, that's how many positions we've got going through, so we would have to we'd be asking for that kind of meeting pretty regularly.
Okay, so we have Board Member Wick.
I don't know why, especially since we have this set as a study session issue potentially moving forward and looking at all of these rules. I don't know why we wouldn't continue with the blanket waiver. I mean, I'll just show my hand. I'm not a fan of it anyways, that to have a residency requirement, I think it flies in the face of DEI work and all of that. So I don't know why until we can discuss this further in the study session environment. Going through the recommendations from this very large and detailed report that we all have, that we wouldn't just continue with our blanket waiver until such time as we have the study session to discuss it. I think it's a huge burden on staff to have to come before this group and make that ask every time.
Okay. Thank you, Board Member Webb.
And Chair Hanson?
Yes.
May I add something as well?
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, the timing of my presentation about the workforce equity study didn't come before this, but I think you'll see when I present that briefly, if you haven't had a chance to read all 143 pages of the report, that the study actually identified the residency requirement as problematic and recommended a waiver or something like that. But the really interesting find is that they say our recruitment pool is not just the city of Tacoma. It's really Pierce County as a whole, especially because we have all of those different locations with TPU and such. So that's another factor for this. So I appreciate the consideration.
So Ms. Fritz, we could either do one of three things as I see it, and if anybody else sees anything else, let me know. We're actually not reinstating a blanket waiver. We would instate a blanket waiver because we already removed the blanket waiver before. So we would instate a blanket waiver. That would be one option. The other option would be to hold more meetings rather than one monthly meeting. And the third option would be just to continue to have are just one monthly meeting. And Ms., could you provide us with some input as to any issues you would have with having one meeting to approve or disapprove of the residency waivers?
Yeah, the challenge is we can't officially appoint someone into a position until that waiver is granted. So we can make an offer contingent upon, you know, your approval of a waiver. But the way the market is moving and the competitiveness of our positions and candidates for those positions, it would be too long, I think, for them to wait. So say if on October tomorrow we made an offer to a candidate, and then we would have to wait all the way until the next board meeting in November to actually then officially appoint them if you approved the waiver. That's a long time for someone to wait, you know, to know about a job. So that's why if we did something kind of in the interim, it would require that more frequent meeting of the board.
Board Member Klein.
Yes. Chair Hansen, would you accept a motion at this time, or do you want to continue discussion?
Yeah. Thank you. I was going to actually ask for one, so thank you.
I would move that we install a blanket waiver that will be in place until such time as the board has adequate time to study and determine a permanent long-term solution. I do this recognizing that some people feel strongly on both sides of this issue, but I think this will keep pressure on us to continue to look into this issue and resolve it to everyone's satisfaction. And I think if we don't do it, then we're going to just create all kinds of little fires around us that will end up detracting from ultimately solving the overall problem. So.
I second that motion.
Okay. Do we have any further discussion on the motion?
Ms. Chairman?
Okay. Board Member Sexton.
You know, I was the maker of the original blanket waiver motion, and it was never meant to be a permanent blanket waiver. You know, I don't think that makes any sense at all. If it was supposed to have been permanent, I think it would have been called something else. But I think the problem that we made was, you know, not putting a strict time period on it. You know, the city was able to say, you know, this is the way it is now. This is permanent now. You know, this is a done deal. And, you know, if we, you know, would have made it for, you know, a month or 6 months or a year or whatever the time period, you know, needs to be, you know, that would have, you know, that would have got us, you know, back to the table to, you know, fix the problem, you know, rather than, you know, just, you know, kicking it down the field, which is what we did and what the city, you know, came back and said, okay, that's a done deal. That's a permanent blanket waiver. And that's, you know, what I want to make sure we avoid. We don't get, you know, trapped into that again. You know, so I would like to see, a friendly amendment of a time period on this.
And board. Board Chair Hansen, in response to Board Member Sexton's point, my motion was not for a permanent waiver. It was until such time. If staff can say what would be a reasonable time that we could get through study session discussion, public input on this, I'd have no problem setting a period as long as that we have a reasonable period of time and we don't have to keep modifying it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Board Member Sexton, yeah, I believe Board Member Klein's idea, as he was just stated, was that the blanket waiver would be institute until such time as we could study the issue and then come up with a final decision as to what we want to do. Does that sound reasonable?
Mr. Chairman, it's just that, you know, this is exactly what we did before. You know, the thinking was exactly the same. You know, it was never meant to be a permanent waiver. You know, we were going to, you know, do this waiver until, you know, we could figure out, you know, how to fix the problem. And the city, you know, just took it as, well, you know, we don't need to do anything else now. We have this blanket waiver. And okay. So, you know, if Board Member Klein doesn't have a time period, you know, I don't know, how's 2 months sound? How's 3 months sound? I don't care. As long as there's a beginning and an end, as long as we can see that, you know, we're not doing a permanent blanket waiver, I'm for any period of time that you want to do.
Board Member Klein.
Yes, as long as Vice Chair Wick, who seconded the motion, is in support of this, I would amend it to have it terminate no later than 6 months, or at such time that the board makes a decision on this issue. So in other words, if we do it sooner, then we do whatever we decide to do. But at 6 months, it automatically goes away and we'd have to face the issue again.
Ms. Fritz.
Thank you. I was just going to add for context that I started about 5 years ago. And when I started, I did not know it wasn't permanent. So I apologize if there was any miscommunication on my part for that. I now fully understand the board's desire to do what the citizens asked us to do. And so really I'm asking for this on a temporary basis, knowing that we're going to start the discussion in November and see, I don't know how long it'll take, but I'm really excited about the collaborative approach to solving this issue through our study sessions coming up. So anyway, just wanted to say that. Thank you.
All right, thanks. So Board Member Klein's motion is that we will reinstitute the blanket residency waiver that will remain in effect for 6 months or until such time as the board makes a final decision as to the residency requirement. Is that correct, Board Member Klein?
Yes.
Okay.
It'll automatically terminate in 6 months if we don't do anything.
So may we have a second for that motion as amended by Board Member Klein?
I'll second as long as there's verification that this is one of our first study session issues. I don't want it to be our fifth study session issue and be bumping up against that. So I think I heard Director Fritz say that this was our number study session issue. And if that's the case, then I would institute my second.
Right, Board Member Wick, that's going to be our study session issue on November, and then we're going to have a study session on residency every single board meeting until we get this resolved. So.
And I'm good with the second then to his.
Okay, so all in favor of Board Member Klein's motion, please say aye.
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 All opposed? Nay. So that motion passes. Okay. Let's see. So,
Mr. Chairman,
yes, Board Member Sexton. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I just wanted to thank Board Member Klein for working that out so agreeably. and Board Member Wick for the second. And I appreciate Director Fritz's comments there too. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The next item, agenda packets, it's informational. And what Wendy is going to be doing is providing electronic copies of all the civil service board materials, including the agendas and any items that are going to be on part of the agenda. And it's all going to be electronic unless a hard copy is specifically requested no later than 1 week prior to the scheduled meeting. So that's the office policy right now. And our next agenda item is the issue regarding minutes of meetings. And we've had for the past several months verbatim transcripts as minutes of our meetings. And I think the standard practice is to have kind of a brief summary of the items that were discussed at a particular meeting, which is obviously different from the format that we have now. The format that we have has created some issues because it involves a considerable amount of time for Ms. Hobson's team to make that verbatim transcript. And I believe last time, as you can see, she had to actually hire a court reporter. And we all know that court reporters are fairly expensive. And I think, Ms. Hobson, you mentioned to me that the cost of the transcript of the last meeting was $500.
Yes, it was just over that.
Okay. So we have the option of either continuing the verbatim transcripts as minutes of the meeting, or we can move to a more standardized meeting minute format where we have kind of a summary of the items discussed at a particular meeting. And I believe that Ms. Hobson in the past has generally drafted that kind of format of the meeting minutes. And Board Member Wick.
I just wanted to say that I'm a huge fan of going to 15, 16 pages of verbatim minutes. I just flat out will say is torturous to read. So for the general public, when we have a material important, you know, they have to get through 6 pages of ums and yeses and, you know, all the things to get to the substance. And really those minutes are not for us, they're for the public that we serve, and they have to dig into multiple pages to try and find the actual content that they're looking for. I just think it's wasteful. I don't think it's necessary. I think we can still compartmentalize our subject matter and convey discussion. I understand not saying just something was discussed. It could say, you know, Board Member Klein had a concern about such and such and such, right? It doesn't have to be that brief, but it being verbatim again.
Ms. Chairman?
Yes, Board Member Sexton.
I agree with Board Member Wick. And, you know, boy, I'm happy to hear that they're not going to be sending the package out any longer, because, you know, just the reproduction of all of these pages just seems really wasteful to me. But you know, when it's verbatim, you know, we have to, you know, argue over every word that was said, you know, and it takes a lot of time, you know, for us or anyone else, it's, you know, almost impossible to find what you're looking for. But the point I wanted to make was that, you know, we will always review and amend the minutes as necessary. You know, so if we just have a brief summation of what happened, what was said, and then when board members want to amend it, want to add to it, we have that ability.
Okay. Board Member Klein, are you? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry.
That's great. Thank you.
Board Member Klein, did you have?
Yeah, no, Chairman Hansen, I share the same position as the other board members. I agree it's time to move back to the more summarized minutes.
Okay, great. I don't think we need a motion or anything to vote on this. So I think we'll just go with the format that Ms. Hobson has used in the past, which is kind of a summary of the issues that were discussed. And we'll do that in the future.
Chair Hansen?
Yes.
I would also like to just add that the audio recording of these meetings is posted on the city's website for all of you and the public to access at any time, as well as the minutes. So there's always that available to anyone as well.
Right, absolutely. We do have a record of every minute or of every meeting. So thank you for adding that. Our next item is Ms. Fritz would like to make a presentation to the board on the workforce equity study. And Ms. Fritz, would you like to do that?
Yeah, thank you very much. I will try to keep this as brief as possible, but I thought this might be helpful. It's sort of the Cliff Notes version of that large report that you received, but it's also very informative, I think, for our upcoming study sessions. So wanted to share it with you. So it concluded in 2021. We started it in 2019. Obviously, the pandemic kind of put a little bit of a pause on that. So what I mentioned is I'll present sort of the brief overview of the highlights and recommendations made by our consultants, which were Keen Independent Research. They are a firm that do this kind of study regularly. Obviously, for more information or to go into further depth, you'll want to consult the actual report. But let me hold on one second here, share my screen. I had the consultants lined up to present to the Civil Service Board last year, but unfortunately that meeting got canceled, so you all never got to see this whole report or presentation. And I obviously struggle at doing two things at once, so let me just fix my screen here so I can see you and see the PowerPoint. So are you seeing my screen that says City of Tacoma Workforce Equity Study?
Okay. Yes.
Good. Okay, so this is the presentation that our consultants gave leaders, staff, anybody who would listen at the time that we did this study. I'm going to move pretty quickly through it, so please feel free to stop me if you've got any questions. And I obviously won't do it as good a justice as they did, but you'll get the idea. So what we did is with these consultants, we really wanted to look at, you know, the equity and fairness in all of our people practices. They did focus groups with employees, in-depth interviews, case studies, a disparity analysis, and looked at, you know, what other cities are doing, because they've done this work with several other cities and organizations. Three themes emerged from this study, and it really is better defining the geographic area from which we hire people. It's what I mentioned earlier about it being Pierce County more than the Tacoma area. Really a good solid look at our city outreach and hiring practices. And then there was some themes around employee advancement and retention. and feeling included in the workplace. So they looked at all of our employment actions for 2012 through 2019. So this is a little bit dated. And that is promotions, hires, separations, a whole lot of data. They looked at the results by, you know, the department and their job group. They looked at census data on worker availability in Pierce County, and then compared outcomes with benchmarks to just, you know, identify where there were disparities. So their key conclusions included, we've done a pretty good job at keeping or attracting a diverse population and diverse applicant pools to the city. It was clear to them that societal discrimination still limits the number of people that of color that are hired into specific fields, like, you know, the number of women in engineering, for example, or all of those were pretty much what we've seen, you know, across the industry and in specific fields were, it's no different at the city of Tacoma that we could use more women, for example, in engineering. It also showed that people of color and women left the city at a higher rate than non-minorities and men. And that retention of diverse employees is our greatest obstacle to keeping that diversity that we've actually hired in. Disparities found in rates of promotion for people of color and women. So the data showed that more white people and men were being promoted, and that there's a real lack of understanding and trust among employees about getting promoted within the city. Confusion about the process, and some perceived unfairness there. It also found that the work environment wasn't always welcome. This was more in the focus groups, but the theme that our work environment hasn't always been welcome to people of color or women. And then obviously we have a lot more to do in achieving an inclusive work environment at the city. So recommendation number one, which you won't be surprised, is improving how we encourage hiring of people living in the city. So obviously our goal is to take care of the city of Tacoma residents. And the consultants felt that our residency requirement was problematic because it did severely limit us. But they did think that we should really look at ways where we can find some benefit for City of Tacoma residents, like a hiring preference is what they recommended, but something that helps us hire more city residents, but doesn't completely limit us from only hiring city residents. And you can see they created this GIS map of where people live that are employed by the City of Tacoma. And obviously there's a nice, you know, dark graph here of our employees that live in the city of Tacoma, because there are quite a few of them, but it's this whole like purple area, including the islands out there. And, you know, there's some that fell outside of that, but mostly it's the densest population is within Pierce County. So they're saying to me, you should really talk about reflecting your the community or your employee population, reflecting the local labor market that you're actually hiring people from, rather than just the city of Tacoma. Because we say in basically everything that we put out there, our goal is to reflect the community that we serve. So they wanted us to, or recommended that we look at the benchmarks we use for reviewing applicant pools and other analyses we use. When we get an applicant pool before we hire, we look at the demographics of that applicant pool. So adding this as a factor into that is something that they recommend. And in alignment with that, just really strengthening our general diversity outreach activities. they feel like what we're doing now is having a positive impact. So continuing that work and strengthening it where we can. I'm sure this is a goal probably for every employer in Pierce County. But, you know, there's more that we can do as well. One of the things that's been really successful lately is some of the events that we've held. We just held a Women in Public Safety event for both fire and police to attract women to those careers in public safety. So trying to expand things like that that we're doing. Continue to work with training partners to encourage diverse candidates for specialized entry-level positions. This is really about building a pipeline and creating an easier pathway for people into the city. One of the things that we, and they use women firefighters as kind of an entry-level job that had little diversity. So trying to increase diversity at that level. And one of the things you'll see later on is there are really very few entry-level jobs at the city of Tacoma. So it's really looking at those minimum qualifications that we require in our classifications and things like that to see if they're actually right or if they need to be updated. So that's one thing they've recommended that we look at. And it was the next slide. So reevaluate our minimum qualifications and how we score those. We are currently, as you know, looking at those minimum qualifications in our non-represented positions through the class and comp study. Right now, we do represented positions on an as-needed basis. And this is something that the consultant is recommending we take a serious look at for our classified positions. And this one is a number six is a kind of a no-brainer. They're recommending we remove City Charter Section 6.3, requiring citizenship. The charter actually requires that you be a U.S. citizen in order to work for the city. And I think it actually goes that further to say, except for laborer positions, but the way it's currently written violates federal law. So they're recommending we update that when we can. And then, and I'm speeding through these because I don't want to keep you here all night. So let me know if you need me to slow down at any point as well. Recommendation number seven, and one that I think is kind of in our purview here, is looking at how we use tests for entry-level positions. As you know, classified positions require some kind of examination in order to be placed and ranked on a civil service list. And they feel that some of them take a while to complete, and the consultants felt like this is a barrier for some people. Most of them are done by computer. We do have some physical abilities tests as well. Looking at how we're doing this testing, because it does kind of lend towards a long application process. And then the other piece that they brought up, and I have to agree with this, is our current personnel rules really are not flexible in terms of recruitment. So for example, when we want to go hire an office assistant, we have to establish a list. And that list is typically good for a whole year. So if you didn't get in when the window was open, you have to wait a whole year in order to reapply again. We often get a lot of applicants for our office assistant position. But the consultants felt that if we provided some more flexibility in that area, it might help us increase that diversity and also reach people that we aren't typically reaching because they aren't in the know about our application process. Sorry.
I didn't interrupt you. I just had a comment in that regard. So I think what you're saying is that if the list, so you said that the lists are good for a year, that means if a position comes up within that year, then and you haven't taken the test, then you can't apply for that position.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And so wouldn't that create a problem? Because a lot of people that are on the list have found other employment elsewhere, and so they're not going to really want to be in that position.
Exactly. It's really awkward when you have a vacancy and you're in the 12th month of that list and you're calling people who are like, what did I apply for? I don't even remember that. So it's just really kind of awkward, and I don't think it works well. So that's something I think that could be on our list of things to look at as well.
Yeah, we're still going to, we haven't abandoned the personnel rules. We just have to address the residency issue first and then tackle those rules. So that's certainly something we need to look at. Okay, thanks.
And the rules are not bad. It's just they probably haven't been updated, a lot of them, since the 50s. So we've been using the same systems and haven't been adapting to, like, you know, modern recruitment techniques and stuff like that. So yeah, anyway, that's one that's a big one, I think. So again, recommending that we do more to build pipelines for diverse workers for jobs where the labor pools are not diverse. I'll bring up engineering again. That's a tough one. This is a tough area because a lot of times folks are coming out of college or high school and going into areas where, they went to school in a program that wasn't diverse. So it's really figuring out how we can start earlier and get women and minorities into, like, STEM programs, for example. I think this one would be a longer term goal for us because it does require, you know, boots on the ground, going to middle schools, elementary schools, things like that. But it is something that I think a lot of employers are looking at and struggling with as well, because their folks aren't coming out of school that programs themselves aren't diverse. So in terms of number 10, ensure that our minimum qualifications and testing for advanced positions are non-discriminatory, including written exams. So when they did their study, they found that there was some evidence of disparities in promotions for women and people of color. They found there were some disparities also in written exam scores. So really looking at the tools that we use to hire and make sure that, you know, tests are validated, and that, you know, if we need to purchase some kind of tool to assist in this area, that, you know, is something that has been reviewed by experts to show that it doesn't create some kind of disparity. That's what they're recommending. And I believe this probably also goes hand in hand with training of managers as well, and hiring managers. So they also recommend that we proactively communicate and prepare employees for career advancement. One of the areas we've heard about regularly and we're trying to address for the non-rep employees through our class and comp study is really that career progression, so people know what the next step is for them in their career, so that we can retain them. We initially piloted an aspiring leaders program and are looking at programs related to that as well. And we have, in the last several years, started a lead program for both current supervisors, leaders, and aspiring leaders to really start ensuring that people are speaking the same language of leadership within the city, so that we're all kind of talking about it in the same way, but also ensuring that they're getting the fundamental pieces and knowledge to make sure they know the rules, but also have the fundamentals of what it takes to be a good leader or supervisor as well. They recommended that we consider developing a succession program. if all goes well, we should receive some funding in this next budget to hire a consultant to help us build out a succession program. And then they recommended enhancing our current leadership training to include more about managing diverse teams. We saw that as an area of weakness for us. And then number 12, encouraging individuals eligible for advancement to apply. So this really should happen at the supervisory or department leadership level, looking at people for their potential, making sure they know what that career path is and how you apply and how that process works. So take the mystery out of it. And they recommend that we monitor the rates of our applications by gender and race to see, you know, where we might be missing people of color and women in our application process for promotion. And then this was kind of an interesting one. There was a theme that they heard mostly in focus groups that people felt like they were stuck in their department and couldn't promote into positions outside of their department or outside of their bargaining unit. So recommending that we really clarify, you know, what those processes are for people, make sure they're really transparent, and also educate leaders of that as well when they're having their core conversations with employees. And then, as I mentioned earlier, and it's kind of duplicative of a previous slide, really looking at that how to manage people training for our supervisors and make sure that it's consistent across departments. So we are doing a citywide program, ensuring that everyone has access to that training. So expand it out as far as we can as well. And then again, reviewing and enforcing consistency in our hiring processes for advanced positions in particular. Make sure that what we're doing is consistent across all of our departments. I would say it hasn't been in the past. I think the hiring processes have been a little bit different by department, depending on the hiring manager. So really, like, our analysts and specialists working with their departments to follow our recently released equitable hiring practices and selection. And I know I've got that wrong because it's a few words, but we have created a program to try to make this process equitable and consistent across departments. And then they also advised us to consider affinity groups or employee resource groups. Our Department of Equity and Human Rights has started and manages several of our affinity groups in the city. We are doing that, and it has expanded since this study took place. I do see it kind of expanding further in the years to come because they've been really successful so far. And then deploy regular and consistent employee satisfaction surveys. We also do this. We launch them every 2 years. We're just in the middle of one right now that's actually going to close, I think, probably at the end of next week. It was supposed to close this week, but they're going to extend it. So we look at those employee satisfaction survey results, and as departments and as a city leadership team, create action items from it. And I'll actually go over that with you in my director's report later. And then make sure that it's really clear to employees what they need to do if they feel like they've been sexually harassed or discriminated against. Make sure that we have multiple avenues for making complaints available for them. And our EEO officer has been here about 3 years now, and she has been working diligently on that. The retention issue. So really focusing on eliminating the disparities in retention of employees. We need to make sure that we've got good metrics. And this is the harder, longer term one. We've really got to change the culture so that there is more of a feeling of inclusion and belonging. That's not one that happens in a month, I'll tell you that. So that was my very fast overview of the consultant's recommendation to us. As you can see, there are quite a few. For more detail, you can definitely follow up in the report or feel free to reach out to me if you've got any questions. And that's what I have for you. If you have any questions now, I'd be happy to answer them as well. Thank you for letting me go over that with you.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Fritz. Any questions? All right. Our next item is consideration of matters set for public hearing. And Ms. Hobson, would you happen to have an update of the Joseph Harris hearing? Have you heard anything from him or?
Yes, Chair Hansen, I do have an update. I did send out an email to him a little over a week ago, asked him to respond to me by noon today. I did receive confirmation that he read the email, but he has not responded. So I am assuming that we can move forward to close this matter, and I can send him a letter stating that, if you all agree.
So how long did he have to? Oh, he did receive it. Okay, you saw confirmation that he did receive it.
Yeah, I requested a read receipt, and I did get that today. So he read it today, but he didn't reply.
Yes, Ms. Lance.
Just to clarify, Wendy, you told him that you needed to hear back from him because we were going to be able to have an in-person hearing, and he still hasn't responded.
Correct. I let him know that the emergency proclamation had been lifted and that he could have his appeal heard at the next meeting in November. And if that day didn't work, if he would prefer another date in November to let me know. And I received the receipt that he read the email, but he did not reply.
This is interesting situation because obviously Mr. Harris has to pursue his appeal. So at some point we have to have some final determination. Board Member Sexton.
Mr. Chairman, we just had, quite a bit of discussion on this earlier. I don't think we need to do anything more tonight. He just got the notice and he just got it and he just read it and he hasn't responded to it yet. I think we should, allow him, some time. Hopefully we'll hear from him before too long, but there's no reason for us to, cut him off tonight or make any decision tonight. We should, allow him, some time to, figure out what he wants to do.
Okay. Board Member Wick.
I forget, did he have legal counsel or union representation or anything?
I don't believe he did.
I would agree with Commissioner Sexton that I do think a follow-up with a definitive, if we don't hear from you by this date, we will be taking action to consider it closed. Like, I don't think just the noon today should be the cutoff. I think there should be another opportunity with perhaps 30 days and basically a deadline to say if there is no response by this point, then the board will take action to consider the matter closed.
Okay, Board Member Wick, I think that's a really good idea. So why don't you give him 30 days, Ms. Hobson, and then you can inform him that if we don't hear from him within 30 days, that his appeal will be dismissed. Does that sound okay to everybody? Do you have anybody want to provide any other input on this? Board Member Sexton, does that sound, did you want to provide additional input? You had your hand raised.
I gave you a thumbs up. I think that's great.
So we'll just go ahead and do that. All right. Civil Service Coordinator report.
I do not have anything to report.
Human Resources Director report.
Well, hello again. So I have two items to report on this evening now. The first is our classification and compensation study. We're nearing the end, fortunately. And our class and comp team, along with our consultants, are in the middle of meeting with department directors and superintendents to review the proposed classification structure, positions, and salary ranges for their individual units. We anticipate this will be completed by the end of the month. Then the review of individual employee allocations will begin. And anticipate that the results of this study will be implemented effective January 2023. So that is finally moving along nicely. As I mentioned earlier, we launched our employee satisfaction survey on September 26th. It happens every 2 years and is open to all city employees across the city and Tacoma Public Utilities to take. As I mentioned, we use this data to make improvements in areas highlighted by our employees. For example, the 2018 survey results indicated a desire for us to enhance our direct communications from the city manager and utilities director to employees. As a result of this, we launched citywide employee town halls that the city manager and utilities director host. We created joint communications from the city manager and utilities director on things that are major announcement to improve clarity and consistency across the two campuses, and established a senior leader connect meeting to improve communications to senior leaders on citywide initiatives at that sort of next level down from the executive team. That is some of what we've got going on right now, and concludes my report for this evening. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Fritz. Comments by the public? Any comments by the public that are attending the meeting today? Comments by board members? All right. Do we have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Second.
The meeting is adjourned, and we'll also, next month, we'll start our discussion on residency. Thank you all.
Have a good evening, everybody.